Welcome to Hope Is Here. My name is Greg Horn, and we want to provide hope. And I'll tell you, an area that keeps a lot of people from having hope is childhood abuse. And there are many forms of that, from physical, verbal, and unfortunately sexual abuse as suffered as a child. And actually was sexually violated as a child myself. And so I can definitely relate to that topic. And so we're going to be talking over the next few programs with Rick Huttner. He wrote a book called Resilient People, A Journey from Childhood Abuse to Healing and Love. So, Rick, first of all, thanks for joining us on Hope Is Here from Lexington, Kentucky. Where are you at today?
I'm in Durango, Colorado.
All right. Well, what a beautiful state. Kentucky and Colorado both have a few things in common with the beautiful forests and trees. Your mountains are a little bit taller than ours, but beautiful area.
It is beautiful, and so is Kentucky.
Well, thanks. Well, I've read several pages in your book and could really resonate with that. But, man, you know, you kind of had a tough childhood. And just share a little bit about that you shared in the first couple of chapters in the book with us about your childhood and just kind of how things were at home and then how things kind of changed big time in the summer when you were 13.
Yeah. Well, when I was 6 months old, my mother had a very severe nervous breakdown. Her mother died unexpectedly. Her father was a pretty harsh man, and she just, whatever happened in her mind, she attempted to kill myself, and I believe one of my brothers. My other brother doesn't completely agree with that, although he understands something happened. We were sent away. There were four boys. We were sent away to different relatives. It was never talked about. I don't know how long we were sent away. And I had no conscious knowledge of this, but I used to have two night terror dreams. In the first dream, I was little. I think I was in a crib, and it was dark, and I began to feel this tremendous pressure on my throat and my chest, and I tried to fight it off, and I couldn't, and the more I fought, the worse it got. And when I finally gave up, it ended, and I would wake up just soaked in sweat and terrified. And in the second dream, I was in that room, in that crib, it was dark, and I knew someone was coming to hurt me, possibly kill me, and I had a handgun. And I could point the handgun, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't pull the trigger. And I could see myself, my face contorted, mouth open, trying to scream and not a sound coming out. And that dragged with me until my middle 20s. And then I got into therapy, actually for some other reasons, and with the help of two kind therapists, the realization came as I was little, I couldn't stop my mother from hurting me. And when that realization came, I never had any of those dreams again. But they terrified me. When I was 13 years old, we lived on Long Island, New York. My parents had a little cabin up in the Catskill Mountains. It used to be an old one-room schoolhouse. And he was a very good friend of the family, the local policeman. And he stopped by, and all he'd take me riding in a police car. He bought me my first rifle, a Mossberg 22, taught me how to care for it, how to clean it, how to shoot it, how to be safe with it. And over that summer, I really grew to like him a lot. My father was a German. Both my parents were German immigrants, and he loved us, but he never really played with us. He was always working to make life much better for the family, and that was, I realized, his way of showing how he loved us. Well, Bob, you know, so the second summer we got back up there, I was looking forward to seeing Bob and all. Took me swimming one day, and he said, Rick, I got to stop at my house, and I didn't think anything of it, and he got there, and he said, you want to come up? I've got to do a few things. I came up, and then doing a few things, and he said, I'm tired. I'm going to lie down. He said, come lie down with me, and I never dreamed what was going to happen, and I did, and he started to sexually molest me, and my body was like stunned. I mean, we're talking about I was born in 45, so I was 13 years old. So it was, you know, there was no internet, there was no we had no radio, no TV up there, and I was just panicked and didn't know what to do. This man was a good friend of the family. He was the local policeman. And when it was over, I just was like, I just felt really bad. And he said, Rick, I used Freddie back then. I changed my name, but that's a part of the story to come up. He said, Freddie, this is so special between us, and I love you so much. You can never, ever talk to anyone about this. And for 20 years, I never did. I didn't know what to do. He was the law enforcement. He was friends with my families. And I didn't know where to go with it, so I channeled it inside and hid it away. And that's where how shame builds, secrecy, silence, and judgment. When we got back to Long Island, I developed the most incredible severe stutter. And I think it was the command to be silent got into my brain that way. I couldn't introduce myself. I couldn't say Freddie. And so I ultimately changed my name to Rick because I could say Rick without stuttering. You know, how strange is that?
But on the meanwhile, you know, people on the outside are like, this kid must be a slow learner, or he's got some mental challenges, but it didn't have anything to do with that. It had to do with all the emotional turmoil that you were trying to process from being violated several times that summer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, you know, one of the things that you shared with in your book that I read is perpetrators are amazingly skilled at putting guilt on the people they're hurting, so the abused make excuses for the abusers, and the cycle continues. And I know you saw that play out in your book, and I know that there's people listening today, both here locally in Central Kentucky and the podcast all over the country and 30 different foreign countries that are just going, man, they're telling my story. And that's why I wanted you to share. And, you know, you gave a startling statistic in your book. Research as late as December of 2018 showed that approximately 7.4 million children are abused every year, either psychologically, physically, or sexually. And that figure is probably underreported. So, I mean, we're talking about something that people don't really want to talk about, which is why I want to, because we want to bring hope, because when there's light shined on the darkness, that's when the healing can start to begin. Is that a fair statement, Rick?
That is absolutely a truthful statement, because as long as an abused person keeps us locked away in their mind, as I did for so long, the demons get buried deep in the subconscious mind, and we think we can bury them with alcohol or drugs or, you know, being a workaholic or whatever addiction comes to us to hide that. They leak out, and they leak out in the most inappropriate and harmful ways. And I say this every time I start. I want people to know this. You did nothing wrong as a child. It is a child giver's, child caregiver's responsibility to protect the child no matter what. And two, you can heal. There's a divine spark, a blessing in each one of us that never goes out. And when you're ready to heal, I assure you, the divine presence will come to you and help guide you. And in the book, I discuss a lot of the really best ways to do that.
Well, and that's what I love about your book, that you do get on the solution side, how you got healing. We're going to be talking about that over our next two programs. But, you know, one of the ways that you numbed your pain, you shared in your book that at the age of 14, you found that alcohol was a great way to numb the pain. And, man, that just led you down a really lot of bad roads, didn't it, even as early as 14 and all through high school?
Yeah, it did. I mean, alcohol became my friend, but it wasn't long before it became my enemy.
Talk about some of those consequences of the numbing with alcohol.
Oh, four automobile accidents, 3 motorcycle accidents, a failed first marriage. Wasn't totally my fault, but I didn't bring any healing to it. Failed business enterprises. I created a couple businesses, made substantial amount of money, and a poor strategic decision or something made by me caused those businesses to fail or to be sold a significant less than what the value would have been. And it permeated my life in so many ways. And I had some beautiful relationships with some, women in our church and all. But when those relationships, one, I was engaged to be married, but when intimacy entered, I got terrified. And I bailed. And I didn't have the courage to tell these beautiful young women why I was just leaving them. And I didn't leave them nicely. I just bailed. And I couldn't. The fear of being that intimate to a person terrified me, kept me isolated. And it drove me away from God for a while. My mother was an extremely, I would say, an abusive religious person. Her belief in God was fear, pain, and suffering. And that's what she communicated to us all the time. And it took me a long time to come back to the love of God and the words of Jesus Christ, because I always loved the Gospels, but I could never see her living them. So,
I really thought that was an interesting part of your book, that, because of her pain that she was going through, she thought that through mistakes she had made, such, was abusing you and your brother physically as young children, 6 months old, that, she could get her forgiveness by just being at church all the time. Yet by doing that, obviously she neglected just your basic needs as a child of love and affection and caring. So, whether it's alcohol, which obviously we know can be really detrimental if, not done in moderation. Also, just doing a lot of busy activities at the church can be detrimental to your family too, can it?
It absolutely can. She abandoned us once and then again. Abandoned us when she tried to hurt us, kill us, or me, and then second, when she just had to commit all her time at the church. She was in every organization and everything, and I'd come home from school and there'd be nobody there, and that was abandonment in its own right.
Just tuned in, we're talking with Rick Huttner. He is the author of a book that just recently came out called Resilient People, A Journey from Childhood Abuse to Healing and Love. And I know you've kind of heard the gloom and doom part today, but we've got him on Hope Is Here because he does talk about how he got healing and he's now helping others. He is the founder of Resilient People. And if you want to find out more about that or how you can get a copy of this book, go to Resilient People. .us. That's resilientpeople.us. But I hope that you will invite somebody to join us tomorrow as we continue our conversation with Rick Huttner and kind of find out how did he get healing from all this sexual and physical and mental abuse that he had as a child that just about train wrecked his life as an adult. But hope is on the way, so I hope you'll join us tomorrow as we continue our conversation with Rick Huttner on Hope Is Here.
To go to the next level, you have to change the way that you think. There is way more inside of you than you can imagine.
Everyone has influence. Come to the Global Leadership Summit on August 9th and 10th and learn skills to help you lead transformation. The summit features high-impact leaders like Craig Groeschel, Angela Ahrens, T.D. Jakes, and more. Experience the Global Leadership Summit on August 9th and 10th. Register today at willcreek.com/summit or call 800-570-9812 and use the priority code RADIO.
Local host site in Central Kentucky is Lex City Church. Check them out online at lexcity.church.